Who knew this would happen? A magic potion could save my heart. Who knew that these feelings had a name? I'm worthy of change, same as you are. Mirror, mirror, don't you judge me? Don't you dare. Who knew I was capable of loving? Who was there staring back? I said, staring back.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Transitional Wisdom Podcast, where Nash and I discuss all things trans and queer related from a variety of different perspectives. This week's episode is going to be a little bit different. We have broken it down into two separate parts, and also it's just going to be Nash and I. So welcome to Nash and C Discuss.
Today we're going to hear about your journey to figuring out where you felt most comfortable within the trans community. Is that a good way of explaining it?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty accurate way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So, I mean, let's just dive right in. Like, my first, obviously, glaring observation is, you know, for me, my journey of figuring out, you know, my label or my where I fit in, so to speak, there wasn't much to it. It was very much from, you know, a young age, I kind of knew that I was a boy. I felt like a boy. Everything to me pointed to boy. There was not really any ambiguity between, like, am I really a boy? Is there some in between that I can fit into, kind of thing? Which is something I did try to do, just kind of fit in the in between and see if that was comfortable enough for me. And it was did not work. So there was not much of the exploration of figuring out what label worked for me or what. I don't know if label is the right word. Is that the right word?
Yeah, no, okay. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Okay, so yeah, my journey was pretty limited in that way. So I want to hear more about, like, where you kind of started to explore your own journey of coming to this position of feeling comfortable, finding your identity and everything.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I have a lot of the same, like, from an early age, like, always knowing that I was different in some way. Like, I've never felt like a female. I've never felt like a girl, so to speak, or feminine in any way. I do hold a lot of the same, you know, like the typical trans narrative, you know, hating wearing dresses, always playing sports, that kind of stuff. But it was also never so definitively like, I'm a boy. And okay. Really my discovery of, like, gender didn't start until after I graduated college.
Okay.
And it was mainly through the internet, because I was not exposed to it before. I had encountered, you know, maybe a few other, like, trans women in my life before that, but the trans mass community was something that was completely foreign to me. And so when I started being exposed to that, I could relate in a lot of ways, but in a lot of other ways, I just could not. So then I started doing a lot of research on, like, YouTube and stuff. And I found a couple, like, maybe one or two non-binary people that really, when they spoke their words, I was like, that is something I can actually identify with.
Was there anything that stands out to you now, looking back, that you felt you identified with strongly?
Just the more, like, in between, kind of like, I don't want to say, like, confusion. Okay. Of it, just more like the ambiguity of it. Okay. Like, I don't have to definitively be one or the other. And that was just, like, a really freeing moment for me.
Sure.
Like, realizing you don't have to, like, put yourself on either side of the binary.
Right.
Like, first of all, discovering that gender was a binary and everything, and then going into, like, dismantling that and actually, like, breaking that down was something pretty just, like, eye-opening and everything.
What was your process for doing that?
Just reading.
Okay.
Really just like reading anything and everything that I could come across from other like non-binary people, like different articles or different things that I could find posted to going back to the actual like history of like third gendered people throughout, you know, throughout the past centuries.
Okay.
That was very like, I don't know how to put it, like very reassuring that this wasn't some, this isn't some new age, you know, hippie dippy thing. This is something that has always existed and has just been wiped out by white people.
Right, right.
I mean, really.
Yeah, because I think about, you know, in there's like two-spirit people and there's different categories or different genders in different cultures and everything.
Yeah, so I'm actually Japanese, Hawaiian, and Portuguese.
Okay.
Along with Swedish and probably a million other things. But my my birth grandma is Japanese, Hawaiian, and they do have a third gender specifically in their culture. And so I was able to like go back and read more about that and like really kind of connect more to that as well.
Yeah. I imagine that the cultural, like the cultural reassurance of that is probably nice too, right? Like to know that that fits into the culture you're from.
Yeah, it does. Like, I mean, it makes a huge difference. And that's not to say like every culture, like, you know, the, definitely third gendered people were celebrated as well as persecuted and, you know, at different times, but knowing that they were upheld and, you know, celebrated and it wasn't such a big deal as as it is today. is really interesting, you know, in a lot of ways we've come so far with our technology and information and everything. And then in other ways we're just, we've gone backwards. It's interesting to see, you know, people hundreds of years ago are just like, like no big deal.
When people, I always think it's funny when people say like, well, transgender didn't exist until like now or until 5 years ago. And I'm like, really? Or maybe it was just that, you know, it wasn't talked about because it was just like an accepted thing. Yeah. You know, it was just part of the world.
Definitely. And you have to go back and look at like who's telling the stories, you know, like whose narratives are you reading and listening to? Like, that's why you don't think trans people have existed, because we weren't talked about until we started talking about ourselves.
Yeah. That it's, I feel like that was a somewhat like obvious point that you made, but I never thought about that. That's very, like, it's a very good point that it depends whose narrative you're reading. Of course, because if you're reading these, you know, very like heteronormative, like cis men's narratives of the world, of course that might be left out, you know, conveniently left out.
Yeah. Conveniently, you know, or, you know, washed away in certain aspects and twisted a little bit. So yeah, definitely.
Thank you for saying that. Was really, that's making me think like, you know, but I, So was your, when you did start to explore, you know, your gender and all of that, would you say that a big part of it happened on Instagram or on social media?
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. Like 100%, you know, between, and really I, a few YouTube videos, but I would say like 95%. Through like Instagram hashtags, networking, reading other people's words, and then finding their works through Instagram as well, like different articles that they've maybe written or stuff like that, but definitely Instagram.
So something that I've heard a lot, and I'm sure you have as well, is, you know, that transgender is like a phase, or, you know, the same things I heard when I identified as a lesbian, like, oh, it's just a phase. So, of course, I don't believe that, but let's just entertain that thought for a second. If it is a phase, you know, or whatever, how do you how did you look through these posts or videos and whatever, and kind of come to a place of understanding, like, yes, this is me, this is how I label myself, versus sort of letting this society to define you based on what people were writing, like, so allowing their narratives to put you in this box or fit you into this non-binary space. Was there a way that you sort of were able to mentally navigate, like, yeah, this is me, this is not just like an influence?
Oh, definitely. Because I think a lot of it came from not relating, like, completely to what people were saying. Like, I could always pinpoint a discomfort with something in my life regarding gender or sexuality in that regards. But reading, you know, I could never relate to, like, crippling dysphoria or, I mean, I have extreme social anxiety, but that's for a million other reasons as well. But there is definitely, I think it was more of a not being able to relate to people that really allowed me to explore who I was. And still to this day, even, you know, fellow non-binary people that I follow, none of us, you know, none of them I can point to and say, yeah, like we have the same exact views for our gender. Like, you know, we prefer the same pronouns or whatever, or this or that. Like, we have the same experiences. And I think that it was freeing to, especially when it started to pop up more on Instagram, to see so many people that this was a thing, that this was possible. You know, like, these are options that people have. Just seeing the amount of people that were starting to transition and everything was, you know, encouraging, but also not being able to completely relate to them was what allowed me to also navigate and find my own identity. And even through that, like, there were, I had even watched some, like, detransitioning videos on, like, YouTube and stuff, just because I wanted to see people's experience who did start it and then did stop and what they had to say about it and stuff. Mm-hmm. Just in preparation of what are my options.
Right. And I imagine that was helpful in, to just know, why did they choose to stop? And, you know, would that somehow relate to anything you were feeling that would also make you want to decide to stop? Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. And that was before I ever started any part of my actual medical mm-hmm. transition as well. But mm-hmm. just to, like, prepare myself for any sort of option that or situation that could have occurred yeah. from there on out. So.
Yeah. I think you did a lot of prep work, like, both emotionally and research wise.
I did a lot of writing. Mm. That was, like, my go-to. And I actually remember the very first, it was, like, all through Instagram. Like, I just fucking posted something that I wrote and mm-hmm. I was like, all right, there it is. Like, I think I actually sent it to a page called, like, Gender Bender
okay.
or something like that. They had asked for, describe your gender or something like that, or describe how you feel. And I think that was, like, one of the first times I actually, like, sat down and, like, put, like, just threw words out there.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I hear that. Something that I was thinking about was, like, so you're saying that even with non-binary people that you have watched their videos or seen their posts and stuff, that you haven't necessarily completely identified with their narrative. Does that feel like sad? Does that feel hard for you in the way that it sounds like there isn't somebody that you can look at and be like, I'm just like them.
Yeah, I think, you know, it used to make me really sad, and because I've always been someone that's needed some sort of community to belong to.
Right. Me too. That's why I was thinking that question. Cause I'm like, man, if I would feel very lost, like, me personally, I would feel it would be hard for me.
Yeah. But I've started looking at it as kind of a different way. Like, I think that within non-binary, you know, I simply identify as non-binary, but you can identify as bi-gender or agender or, you know, a hundred other things, you know, within the non-binary or gender non-conforming. And I've started to look at more of that. Like, not so much as I need someone else to be exactly like me and have the similar narratives and everything like that. But, like, I don't mean it in a bad way, but, like, we're the weirdos, you know, like, I have found my people in the other people who have never found their people.
Oh, that's so cute. Yeah. But I think that's good, because I think, like, you know, you especially being so open and being so willing to share online and stuff, I think that you are probably paving a lot of ground, or you're paving the way for a lot of other people who are going to maybe struggle to find somebody that they also look similar to or feel like they are like them. So I think, yeah, yeah,
I hope so. Like that's my goal. That's the only reason I keep coming back to Instagram is I want my words to, I just remember how alone I felt when I first started discovering everything with my gender. And if people can scroll back, you know, a year ago and read my words, or if they can read them from last week and just find something in them that, you know, makes them feel not alone, that's all I want.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to have to feel like, I don't want anybody, like, don't look at me, don't call me your transition goals, you know, don't say these other things. I do appreciate like the meaning of love behind that.
Right.
But I want my words where you can just find your own freedom, like find, you know, relate to my words in the way that you want to pave your own path, kind of way.
Yes. Like
and just know that there's other people out there.
Yeah. Like, I think that your words are so important. But I do think that, yeah, like they should be used to help somebody to, you know, propel themselves forward or to further explore themselves and that sort of thing versus, oh, I love what C said and I want to be just like them, so I'm going to do all of this, that sort of thing. And that's where I think the harmful stuff comes in, like the harmful actions or the harmful words, because it's so easy to influence another person, you know, even if you're not intending to, it's very easy to do that, especially in this world now where, you know, with social media being so big. And so that's something I try to be very careful of, because I noticed that there's, of course, a lot more younger kids who are exploring their gender that are now on social media. And so they're seeing, you know, older kids or not kids, older people, or, you know, I think of a kid. I forget I'm 30. Like, it's ridiculous. I feel like I'm 18. But, but you know, there's these older, this new generation of younger people that are looking up to us. And so I always worry about, you know, even some of my silly jokes that I know people who have either been following me for a while or who know me, they understand what I'm saying. But you want to be so careful of like, how can this be interpreted by somebody who's younger who may just be seeing this post?
Yeah.
So I think, I think that just touches on what you're saying about you don't want to be anybody's goals. You want to be their, you know, more of like just a positive resource or a positive whatever figure for them to look to. And I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm sure you get a lot of the same, you know, DMs that are, you know, similar in regards.
I'm learning. Well, I'm just seeing that there are. Yeah, I mean, I've gotten a couple of younger kids that have been reaching out, and which I love, because the one thing that I've always said, like since I started Hormones, was if I ever choose to put myself out there, like on social media, to openly share, which I have ultimately decided to do in the last, you know, year, but previous to that, if I ever came to that point, the whole purpose in my mind, like for me, my purpose was so that anyone younger did not have to feel the way that I did, or, you know, would hopefully not feel the way that I did, because I never had anyone to look to. I never, you know, my mom, so freaking cute and so supportive, but my mom bought me the movie Boys Don't Cry when I was like 13, because she thought that it would give me somebody to identify with of, you know, in Brandon Tina, which it most certainly did. Like, that was the first time where I was like, holy fucking shit. Like, this is me.
And then
me.
Also terrified you.
Yeah. Because, you know, I'm simultaneously like, this is me. Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my, I'm like crying. Like, oh my God, finally understand myself. I understand this whole thing. And then, you know, you get to the part for people who haven't seen it, but you get to this part of this horrifying attack and this horrifying murder, senseless murder, all out of ignorance and everything and just hate. And so, of course, I'm sure naturally, you know, I'm like, okay, back in the closet, or, you know, whatever, got to go backwards. Like,
yeah, that is also a true story. So it's
exactly.
Not like,
so you know, don't want to ignore that narrative of like what can happen, because that's not safe. Like, you're not protecting yourself by ignoring those things. But, you know, at 13, of course, you're just horrified by this and like, oh my God, is this what I'm doomed for? And so, you know, again, like I see that and I'm like, well, I don't want, I would hate for somebody else to have to see this and experience that. I want them to have more positive people to identify with, you know, I want them
and
to see.
And that's why our narratives are important. You know, that's why, you know, who is voicing the stories and what stories are told.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's why.
Because I just see myself as a very average person. Like, the, you know, I'm another trans guy. Like, you're another trans non-binary person. Like, you know,
exactly. I'm nothing special.
we're special in our own ways. You know, we have a lot to offer in our own ways. But, you know, I've never seen myself as anything more than that. And I think that, but that's why I think it's important, because we are normal average people. And when we can show, like, you can be normal average and trans and happy, or trans and successful, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, I don't it know, makes me smile just saying it like that. Yeah. You know, I hope that's what other people would take. But yeah, like, that visibility is so important. And I think especially for you in this subset of the trans community, you know, in this special, like, this non-binary label, where it's not that it's new, of course it's not new, but it's mm-hmm. newer to some people, or, you know, we're just starting to hear more about it. And I think that's why it's so important for that you are choosing to be out there, you know?
Yeah. I think it's just like an age of, like, re-enlightenment mm-hmm. in a way, like, these things are starting to reemerge that have always been there.
Yeah.
And now there's just, I've noticed a hell of a lot more people just not giving a fuck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to live our lives and, yeah. we're going to present ourselves how we're going to present ourselves, and you can stand there and stare mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. fine. But, you know, I mean, we're going to be happy. And I've just seen so many other people, just like so many genderqueer people.
Yeah. Well, like, I'm sure you follow them, but, ALOC.
Yes.
Okay. So,
oh my God,
Blair, just Blair has been following them for, I think, a few years, and I just somehow never came across their page, but Blair recently was like, you need to follow this person. You need to pay attention to what they're saying. It's so important. And I started following, and first of all, beautiful person. I'm mm-hmm. like absolutely obsessed with their clothing, their everything about them. Amazing. But aside from that, like, the words that they use to write their captions, the way that they talk about themselves, I think is just so powerful, because, like you're saying, there's very much this amazing, they've come to this amazing place of this middle ground of, I don't care what you think of me, because I love myself so much and I think so highly of myself that I don't care if you think I'm, you know, X, Y, and Z. And that's not for me to say that, like, you know, I don't know what their confidence level is internally. I'm just saying mm-hmm. what they have portrayed out to the world. And I instantly feel so warm that they have, you know, that they are able to find this place, because I know that was so hard for me, you know, as just even a binary trans person. So mm-hmm. They said something, they just recently, I don't know if they're still in LA, but they were just recently in LA and they did a talk. I forget what the name of the, it was like a, I don't even want to guess, but they were at some sort of event and they did a talk. And one of the things they said was along those lines of, like, the reason that we're seeing more gender neutral or non-binary people is because there are these people who are finally coming to a place of just like, this is me, and I'm not going to hide it or change for you. And I thought that was so powerful, because imagine if all of us could be like that, of just like, I'm not going to change for you. Imagine how much happier, how much, like, more complete we could have been at some point mm-hmm. earlier in our lives.
Yeah. I mean, imagine, well, and also imagine seeing people like that when we were younger.
Yes. Yes. I imagine that they are probably inspiring so many people of, like, hey, I can do this. I can walk around New York City in these high heels and these colorful outfits and my hair beautifully done. I can walk around LA doing this, wherever, all these small towns that they're going to. Yeah, it's inspiring. And even as a binary trans man, me, I still am inspired, because I'm like, look at you owning this. Like, you know,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, and then I'm like, I'm going to try something new. I'm going to try something different, you know? So, I think it could inspire all different kinds of people.
I think it does. And I think it kind of gives other, like, people more permission to be more open.
Yes. Yes.
You know what I mean? More binary people to be like, mm-hmm. maybe I don't have to be completely 100% this. Like, I can play around a little bit.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's just popped in my head, but one of the other things I've heard, I'm sure, I don't know if you've heard this narrative of, like, you know, I know for trans people, people will say we're trans because we were abused or because of trauma or because of something like that. And I've recently more so heard it with you know, about non-binary people, that non-binary people are confused because of trauma. So they find this middle ground where they don't have to do, you know, they don't have to pick or something, or it's like a protective type of label. What are your thoughts on that?
I have not even heard that before. in regards to like non-binary people specifically. I haven't heard that before.
I just recently saw it on Instagram.
Ridiculous.
Yes, of course it's ridiculous. I just recently saw it on Instagram and I was like, oh, okay. So not only are binary trans people, you know, identifying this way because of trauma and confusion, but now you're further saying that the reason a person is non-binary is because they are just so confused that they can't even, you know, decide.
Yeah, or it's that they have finally figured it out.
Right.
You know, it's like the complete opposite.
Hit the nail on the head. I was hoping you were going to say something along those lines.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's how I see it. I'm like, wait, actually, because for me, I was confused 26 years of my life. The last four.
Like, it has nothing to do with that. Like, I'm still figuring shit out.
Yeah, like the last four of my life, which has been my transition years, have been the most clarity and
exactly.
Lacking confusion.
Yeah, no, that's my only comment. Utterly ridiculous.
Perfect comment.
And
thank you.
The opposite of what they're trying to say.
Yeah. And I think it's important, though, that we do, you know, I try to not respond to some of the negativity and stuff because I don't think it's always worth putting energy into. But
it
do think. Yeah, exactly. And I do think something like this, it's good to respond to this because we have to answer in a way to just say, like, you are very off and this is why you're wrong, you know, like, because I don't like it, you know, I don't like the right and wrong. I just like, sorry, that's not correct. Like,
yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, you know, when people try to tell you you're not transgender because you identify as non-binary, maybe you don't wish to medically transition.
Right.
They try to tell you that transgender means that no, you need to transition.
Right.
But that's literally not the definition of the word, you know?
Right.
I mean, when people are so just wrong about what they're saying, I mean, it has to be addressed at certain points.
Yeah. Especially when it becomes to the point of being potentially harmful for people to hear.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that stuff is very harmful. If that got passed along to a young, you know, let's say 12, 13 year old person who's thinking they may be non-binary or whatever, and you give them that message that, no, you're just confused. You were just, you know, you were abused when you were younger, or you went through some sort of trauma. And then they're like, oh, wait, but I did go through trauma. Okay. All right. Maybe that's right. And then there's all those years of further exploration they have to go through to even get to the point of getting back to identifying the right way.
And they already had it figured out in the beginning.
Yeah. And honestly, I feel like that's what happened to me was like, because I had always, as a young kid, dressed masculine, looked masculine. People always mistaken me for being a boy, you know, being my parents' son, whatever. Like before I transitioned, my parents had two girls and two boys. And my sister and I were the two older siblings. And then I had two brothers that were younger. And the older of the two brothers, he's still, I think he's like 8 years younger than me still, but like the older one, like my parents, if they saw me, I would often get like, oh, hey, you know, hey John, how are you? And I'm like, that's my brother's name. Like, that's not my name, but that was often what happened. And, several times along the way of me just aging, you know, growing up throughout my life, there was this message of like, well, you know, I went through trauma when I was younger. Like, I had some abuse stuff when I was younger. And so there, you know, there was always this, well, you only like girls because it's safer because of what men did to you, or, you know, what a man did to you when you were younger. So it's safer for you to like girls. And I was like, okay. And not that I ever believed that, but I was like, okay, okay. And then, you know, that's one thing. But then when you get to the whole exploring your gender, like, and then you're like, well, this doesn't feel right. And then you hear, well, remember, you went through trauma, so it makes sense that you would repress these sides of you. It makes sense you would repress a sexual side of you and a gender side of you when your gender was the one that was sort of attacked, or you were attacked because of your, you know, however you want to look at it. And I do really think that that did suppress my willingness to come to terms with that I was trans. So yeah, you know, just as like an example, I do think it can be really damaging to have that be the only reason you're trans is because of this, of what you went through. It just, I don't know. I think
it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I mean, and you really have to just come down to the science aspect in it in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Which I'm not smart enough to be able to spout off, but I should work
on it. Yeah, I'm not either. I mean, I've read some articles, definitely. And I know that it has been true for myself and for quite a few of the other trans mask or non-binary, like assigned female at birth individuals that I know. Like I had naturally higher testosterone.
Okay.
Than a typical cis female, even before like medically transitioning or anything like that.
Okay.
So like there's also like a like biological, like brain wiring, right. hormonal thing that is also involved in it too.
Yeah. I don't know if you ever read Aaron Andrews' book. He's a trans guy.
I have not, no.
So he wrote a book. It's called Some Assembly Required.
I have seen it.
It's fantastic. It was the first book. So he was the first like online person that I saw, him and his girlfriend at the time, who was a trans girl. And so I read his book. I also read the ex-girlfriend's book. They both had books come out, I think, on the exact same day. Like, I think it was a planned thing. It was really cool.
But, okay.
So you had, so you had the trans woman's book come out the same day as the trans man's book. So you kind of had this really beautiful, like parallels, but also obviously very different narratives, mm-hmm. but very mm-hmm. raw. But anyway, in one of the things that Aaron talks about is – I just lost my train of thought. What were you saying right before I started talking about the book?
Hormones, brain wiring.
Yes,
it's
okay.
Just kind of, okay.
Nailed it. So one of the things Aaron said, which I kept this in my mind when I was first tested, when my hormones were first tested before I started transitioning, he had talked about them when he finally went to the doctor and they were on the path of beginning hormones. He had his blood tests taken to have, you know, a starting point for his hormone levels. And he talks about that his testosterone was naturally high for a female born person. And I read the book like 4 years ago, so, you know, don't quote me, but he said something in the book, something along the lines of, you know, obviously I was trans all along. Like my hormone, you know, my testosterone was waiting for me to sort of, you know, pick up the pieces.
Yeah, it's kind of like your body tells you something before your mind, like your actual consciousness, put it that way, actually grasp it. Yeah,
absolutely. And of course, I don't know if that's how it works, but I do think it's really interesting that, you know, this person did really have this higher testosterone. And I do think mm-hmm. that probably contributed obviously to him feeling the way he was feeling, but I think it was obviously natural that he was feeling that way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just kind of like something physically, like I've always had what I call like my caterpillar mustache.
Okay.
Like that's something that I had before starting hormones. Uh-huh. It was a lot lighter and a lot less like mm-hmm. thick and everything. I mean, it's not even very thick, but I mean, let's just be honest.
I love your mustache.
And then I also used to, before starting testosterone, I would get chin hairs.
Okay.
Like very dark and black, and I would just pluck them out. I mean, it would be like, you know, a couple here and there every few months and everything, but it's something that I had to consistently do.
Right.
I mean, it was just like that's something physically, you know,
totally.
Kind of like ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, of course that can be true for cis women who are, you know, identify as cis women, but, but at the same time, like, I do think that there is a difference because I had the same thing happen. Like when I was younger, I had like a mustache also, like I had a little dark mustache and I had mm-hmm. very long sideburns, like much longer than what a cis female would naturally have. And I always attributed it to the fact that I was Armenian. I was Armenian descent. Like, you know, we are hairier people. Like I'm Armenian and an Italian. That's two hairy mixes. So
exactly.
My mom was always like,
even my grandma, because I lived with her before she passed away. I remember walking in all the time and she'd be like, I got to get my chin hair.
Yes.
And I'm like, all right. So even before I was like, okay, that's just something that like reminds me of her. Like that's just something like part of heritage, part of maybe something else.
Totally. And so like I had that, whereas my sister, my mom, you know, they had little bit, you know, it was like the quote normal, like cis female type of extra hair that you want to take care of. But mm-hmm. then you would see me and there was like an obvious difference of like, okay, this is just a little bit more than what it should be for a cis girl. And so, you know, in one memory that always stands out to me that I now laugh at, that I used to cry at, but in middle middle school, I remember it was, I had just started at a new middle school because we had just moved. It was like, and it was like, I think it was the start of spring or something like that. So, you know, it's just getting warm out. And I remember it was the first time I wore shorts to go to school. And I had on, you know, longer shorts. They were, I think, to my knee or like right above my knee. So a little bit more masculine looking. But here I am walking around in these shorts. And I remember this girl. I will never forget her name. I'm only going to say her first name. Her first name is Carrie. She looks at me as I'm walking by and she yells my birth name. And then she goes, "You man beast, do something about those hairy legs." I'll never forget it. And from that day forward, I was always like, I always got the names of like man or like hairy man beast, like things like that. And you would think from this description that I would just be like head to toe hair. I looked, you know, like Sasquatch or something, but like, it wasn't like that. It was like, you know, somebody who is like Middle Eastern background and has some extra hair or whatever. And so, but you know, my sister never got that. My sister never was picked on in that way or had people making comments like that. And I think it was, you know, now I'm like, haha, yeah. Yeah, I was a hairy man.
Right? Like, I was. I've always been.
But like, it makes me laugh to think about that. I did have that attention drawn to it in the past. And I was like, oh, I don't want this. I don't want this. Like, people are focusing on this too much, you know?
I have like a kind of similar experience. I think I was maybe sixth grade. Uh-huh. And I remember I did not like shave my legs or anything up. And like all of my friends, I went to a parochial school.
Okay.
So very small classrooms. Like, okay. I mean, I was one of like, 9-10 kids in sixth grade.
Oh, wow.
Like fifth and sixth was combined, seventh and eighth was combined. Okay. Like, yeah. And I remember someone spilled something on my legs and my friend went to wipe it up and I had never shaved my legs and they're like, oh my God. And I had very long, thick blonde, like, I mean, bleached blonde leg hair. And I just never shaved it. Of course, why would I do that? Yeah. Because my mom never wanted me to. And I just remember so being like, I internalized that moment for so long about what body hair meant on people who are perceived as females and how it should be kept.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I haven't shaved my legs in like 3 fucking years. Yeah. And been on testosterone like over 2. And there are still spots on my legs that don't grow hair. And I'm like, why do they even bother? Why? Like, why are we doing this to ourselves?
I know. It's so crazy. Like, and I remember how tortured I felt over being called like a man about leg hair. And I laugh like it's fucking hair.
Yeah. You know? Like, so I think I was in fourth grade and I cut all my hair off.
Mm.
Like my mom finally let me get the boy haircut that I always wanted. And I was mistakenly, we were flying out to California and I was wearing this t-shirt. It said something like, you hit like something, and it's like girl power on the bottom or something, some ridiculous sports shirt that my mom got me. And, I remember the flight attendant was like, oh, why would you be wearing that? Cause you're a little boy or something like that. And I just like stared it at him and I was like, and like my parents were behind me and I was like, I'm a girl. And then I like, just like sprinted all the way. And just like, so like all the, like the stares that I would get of people like not being able to figure, even as a kid, like take that in and you're, that was, you know,
me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was me too. Same thing.
I'm like, ever cutting my hair short ever again.
Cause I don't know about for you, but for me, like when I had cut, when my parents let me cut my hair and stuff, there was this, it was a mix of complete embarrassment at being mistaken for a boy and also pure happiness. And like the embarrassment was because, you know, I knew my parents were embarrassed cause they were like, oh God, like how do we handle this? And stuff like that. But then at the same time, I was like, oh, happy. Yes, they see me as I want to be seen. And, you know, that to me has always stood out, like that I would just get so happy at those things.
I didn't have quite like the same joy, but it was definitely like a relief that I was finally able to cut my hair how I wanted to, but it was still, I definitely internalized a lot of that guilt and embarrassment whenever I would be out with my mom.
Right.
And people would question, you know?
Yeah.
But why is he playing on the girls' soccer team? Like, you know, why?
Yeah, because when we're young, of course, that's all that is a reflection of poor parenting in people's minds, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a reflection of, like, you knowing what you want out of your life or no. me knowing
yeah,
what
it's
I want.
Your parents not being able to control you exactly. or haven't instilled the correct values
right.
in you in some
yeah.
way.
Yeah, like, quote, bad parents. They're not doing
yes.
something right. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that – one of my, like, childhood memories that I have very few that stand out, but this one of – it's so funny. My sister, we're about 14 months apart, and we were always close when we were growing up, but we always, like, fought all
yeah.
the time.
Oh, I know.
As like, I think as little siblings do. And so my sister, one time I was going to, so my sister was invited to a birthday party, and the birthday party, they invited, from what I remember, they invited me also, even though I was older. I wasn't, you know, wasn't my friend, but it was like, oh, you know, bring both kids. And, my sister, I think, I'm sure she'll correct me, but I think that she was angry that I was invited. Like, she didn't want me to go. And we got into a fight, and basically she ended up biting me on the chest, and she bit me right above my nipple.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think like right next to my nipple or something. And so I remember I was crying, you know, she bit me hard. There was marks. It hurt like mm-hmm. hell, like whatever. And I think I was, you know, 7 or 8. And so my mom was angry with her. My mom, I think, punished her, but didn't let her go to the party. So anyway, she packs me and my sister in the car. We drive over to this person's house for the party. We get to the house, and tears are still streaming down my face. I'm so upset about this bite that I have. And, you know,
and still wanting to go to the party.
Right, still wanting to go to the party. But the parents are all, you know, I don't know where I don't know if it was like this where you grew up, but where I grew up, parents were always very interested in the kids. They were always nosy, wanted to know like everybody else's situation. So, you know, this parent was like, you know, oh my God, what happened? And my mom was like, well, you know, my other daughter bit, you know, I was a girl at the time, obviously. So bit her sister, whatever. And they're like, where did she bite you? And so I'm all like, lifting my shirt off. I'm taking my shirt off. I'm like, she bit me here, right here. And like,
right,
you know,
here, look at it.
And I just remember like being so happy being able to take my shirt off. Like, people wanted me to take my shirt off because they wanted mm-hmm. to see what happened. And that was like one of my most standout moments. And I realize now it stood out to me so much because like, it was one of the only times where people were like, let's, you know, take it off. Let's see your chest, you know, like, uh-huh. and I was like, yes, finally.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, at the time I'm like, why? I don't know. I just wanted to show everybody the bite mark, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And now I think about it like, no, that was a glaring moment for me. Like,
yeah,
you know? And I think that we often have those little moments that we don't really understand until years later when they finally,
oh, yeah.
you know, now
yeah,
like,
you look back on them, and yeah. it all makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. But yeah, I we're getting like a little off of topic of your journey,
but it happens.
Yeah, I think there's value in it. So for me as like a binary trans guy, you know, there's a lot of narratives out there about how transitioning goes. So, you know, like it starts with hormones and then you have top surgery. And then, you know, after top surgery, you have a hysterectomy if you're interested and that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. there's sort of, you know, even though, yes, a binary trans man certainly can pick and choose what they do want to go through. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit more of a like a typical narrative or timeline of what a person would again, typically do.
Exactly.
I don't know of a similar thing for a non-binary person. I imagine that there probably isn't, right?
No, not one. I think more of so what happens is people, if you're non-binary and you know that you want to medically transition, they automatically try to push you towards the trans mask,
okay,
binary transition type of it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I feel like, because that's what they know.
Right.
So you know, like then you want to transition, then you go on a full dose of testosterone and then you have top surgery within, you know, once you can say for it or whatever, you know, and then, right. and then this and then that. And I feel like that kind of gets pushed more on non-binary people, but I think more people are realizing there is no narrative.
Okay.
They're in it. There shouldn't be, you know,
right.
there shouldn't be a set narrative for it because everybody's different.
Right. So I think that, you know, while, so for me, I think it made it easier because I kind of was
like expected in
like I knew what to expect. I knew, you know, that there were these certain things that I can kind of pick and choose what I wanted to do. And so, you know, for me, I always knew I wanted top surgery. Like that was kind of one of the things actually that helped me realize I was trans to begin with, was how much I hated my chest and how uncomfortable I was. So I always knew I wanted top surgery, but after top surgery, it was kind of like, okay, so what do I do next? And, you know, the path is somewhat straightforward in that, you know, if you do want to do something next, you know, next,
but these are your options,
right? Like,
and it's already been laid out. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, you know, next is a hysterectomy and then bottom surgery typically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so it does give some comfort. It gave me some comfort to know what to expect from the path. Whereas I wonder, did you feel any struggle with having to try to figure out like, okay, so what's right for me? Because I'm not a binary trans man, or I'm not a trans, you know, binary trans woman. You know, what happens for me? Did what's your experience there?
I think it actually really hindered me in a lot of ways. Well, and my issue was like, I kind of always knew that I did want to medically transition in some way. Mm-hmm. Like that was definitely, I always had like, I don't call it dysphoria as you know, like I call it more just like an overall discomfort. Like I with my chest, I remember telling an ex-girlfriend of mine, like I either want them gone or I want them bigger. Like I either want them to sit. And I grabbed them and I was like, I want them to sit here or I want them gone. And she was like, well, that would just be pecs. And like looking back on that now, she's like, duh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that makes a lot of sense. Like I was never comfortable with them. I always said like, just fucking chop them off.
Yeah.
Like that's my thing. Like get rid of them. But then, seeing, you know, such of the narrative for, you know, the trans masculine individual of starting testosterone and this and this, it really felt like it was reserved for you guys in a way. Like medical transitioning was more for you, and maybe I shouldn't start testosterone and maybe I shouldn't get top surgery, or if I do, maybe I don't make a big deal about it because there's so many other people who, you know, are truly suffering in a way that I didn't feel like I could relate to.
That's really interesting.
That getting top surgery felt like I know that it just in the moment, it felt like I was doing some sort of disservice to the community because I maybe quote unquote didn't need it.
Okay. I hear
even
you.
Though I did, even though I absolutely did, that's just how it was more kind of, and that was just more internalized, you know, a little bit of internalized transphobia and, you know, everything else that goes into it, or the other narratives that people within, unfortunately, within our own community were putting into my head of, well, you don't really know what you're doing, or you don't really deserve this, or, so you know, supportive. This and that type of thing. Yeah.
Thank you everyone for tuning in to part one of Nash and C Discuss. As always, if you feel that you would like to share your story, or if there's a topic you would like us to discuss or cover, or any feedback that you have to give about any of the variety of topics that we do cover, we'd love to hear it. You can email us at nash@transitionalwisdom.org or visit our website, transitionalwisdom.org. And hey, thanks.
Who knew this would happen? A magic potion could save my heart. Who knew that these feelings had a name? I'm worthy of change, same as you are. Mirror, mirror, don't you judge me. Don't you dare. Who knew I was capable of loving? Who was there staring back? I said staring back at me. It's been a long time coming. I love my shell, I love my scars. Enough for the both of us. I love myself, no I don't need help. I needed a safe space for me to be.